Jewish audio on Chabad.org.
Okay, we are going to be studying a little bit of chapter 10 of Meseches Pesachim tonight. We're going to be studying an excerpt of Daf Kufches Amud Aleph, which is page 108, side A, on the very, very bottom, last line of side A. And we're going to be turning the page onto 108, side B. But the truth is, and I would be remiss if I didn't first share with you, that this Gemara that we are going to be learning now is lifted directly from a Mishnah. So maybe I'm going to direct you now back to the Mishnah. Go to Daf Tzadik Tes, page 99. And you see in the Mishnah that one of the things we say at the end of that Mishnah, which is on page 99, side B, the Mishnah finishes off with the words, V'layifchasulei me'arba kaises shalyayim, that on the night of Pesach, we should not drink less than four cups of wine. V'afilu minatamchoy, even if somebody is literally eating from a soup kitchen, they need charity, nonetheless, one should not have less than four cups of wine, which is quite remarkable, because the average person who is eating by virtue of people's kindness does not usually get wine altogether. And if he gets wine, maybe he gets a cup of wine. But here we say on the night of Pesach, he has to drink no less than four cups of wine. You could drink more, actually, but you can't drink less than four cups of wine. What's up with the four cups of wine? So I'm just going to direct you to Rashi, because we're going to see Rashi when we learn the Gemara says something very different. Rashi on the Mishnah, on Daf Tzadik Tes, on the base on page 99, side B, Rashi says that the Arba Kaises, that the four cups, are Keneged Arba L'Shoinei Geula, correspond to the four languages of redemption. There are expressions of redemption which are found in the Torah, Ha'amurim B'Golos Mitzrayim, which are spoken of in reference to the Egyptian exile. Hashem speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu, that's the famous event at the burning bush, and he says that I am going to redeem the people, V'Hotzeiti Etchem, I'm going to take you out, V'Hitzalti Etchem, I'm going to save you, V'Go'alti Etchem, I'm going to redeem you, and finally, V'Lokachti Etchem, I will take you unto me. This is found, Rashi says, in Parshat Va'era. And that's a whole discussion in and of itself, why these four languages, why does this represent the gamut, the full range of transformation, from being a slave people to becoming a free people. And actually, there are some classes online that I gave years ago. I should go through the four Lashonot of Gula. I remember one class specifically that goes through the four languages and explains it by virtue of the commentary of our sages, Chazal, the Rishonim, some of the later commentaries, Zachronim, and according to the teachings of Hasidus. So that's for a different night. But the point that we want to make here is, Rashi's telling us, what's Arba? What's the four cups? The four cups correspond to these four different expressions that Hashem used with regard to the Exodus, the Geula, the redemption from Mitzrayim. Okay, let's put the Mishnah on the back burner now. That's what the Mishnah says. And we are now going to have the commentary of the Gemara. In the previous Gemara, which we learned in our previous class, we discussed the concept of posture. What's your position on Pesach? Then your position is supposed to be reclining. Your position is supposed to be luxurious. So now, the Gemara changes its attention, turns its attention from the posture and talks about the details. It's going to talk about the idea of drinking four cups of wine, which is quite a little bit of wine. V'amar Rabbi Shua ben Levi. Rabbi Shua ben Levi said, Noshim chayovos ba'arba koseis halalu. Women are obligated to drink these four cups of wine. And this is a surprising statement, because for example, on the holiday of Purim, where we celebrate the great salvation of the Jewish people during the time of Mordechai and Esther, and the Megillah is called Esther, and the primary actor in bringing about Hashem's salvation was a woman, Esther, and there is a mitzvah, the chayiv inish lebesumi v'puria, adela yada, a person is required to imbibe of strong, intoxicating wine until he does not know the difference, doesn't know between good or bad, as the Gemara goes on to describe it. And the actual halacha is that women are not obligated in this. And it's not even appropriate, it says. And yet, on the night of Pesach, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, Noshim chayoves ba'arba kaisis halalu. Women are obligated in the consumption, the drinking of these four cups. So this has to be understood. Now, before we go on to the actual halacha at hand, which is who's obligated, but women are obligated as well, Rashi, fascinatingly, tells us, Arba Kosas, Rashi is on the inside of the page, the smaller print on the inside. On the bottom is his grandson, Rashbam. It's not like this in every Masechet, but that's how it is in Masechta Psachim, in the tractate of Psachim. So the last Rashi on this page, which is the top half of those of the inside of the page, Rashi says, Arba Kosos, four cups, Shalosha Keneged Gimel Kosos, three correspond to the cups, Shenemru B'Pasuk Zeh, which are said in this Pasuk, the Pasuk, V'Kois Parai, the goblet of the Pharaoh, B'Yodi, is in my hand. This is the dream of the butler speaking to Yosef HaTzadik, who interprets the dream. Uvarevi, and then when it comes to the fourth cup, that's Berachat HaMazon. So Berachat HaMazon, you're supposed to over a glass of wine, and since tonight is connected to wine, so the three cups are corresponding to Kos Paro, to the goblet of Pharaoh, and then we move on to the fourth cup, which is the concept of wine. Now really, it's quite telling and compelling that Galut itself is metaphorized as a dream. As it says, Hayinu Kecholmim, we were like dreaming. A dreamlike state. And when you're in a dream, things don't really make sense. They don't have to be logical. If somebody comes along and said, I had a dream, and he begins to describe a reality or a situation that's totally incompatible with the facts on the ground, nobody will say, how could you have such a dream? It doesn't make any sense. How? I had a dream. Dreams don't have to make sense. The truth is, Galut makes no sense. In every which way. Including the fact that Galut allows for the reality that on one hand, we could be passionately engaged and involved in our Judaism. We could really care about Hashem. And a moment later, we could care less. We become totally swept away with all kinds of external and alien influences. And the Rebbe once explained, many times actually, this idea of the fact that a Jew can, at one hand, experience such a powerful longing for God. And he could be so filled with passion and fervor for Yiddishkeit. And at the same time do something which literally is on the polar opposite of the gamut of the human emotion. It's not a question. It's not a sign that he's a hypocrite. It's a sign, number one, that he's a Jew. And a Jew has two neshamas inside him that are raging for control. A nefesh elokis, a godly soul, and an animal soul. And he's in galus. And that's the reality of galut. Galut is a strange reality. And we see this from the very beginning, that the Jewish people's coming down into Mitzrayim begins first with Yosef's dreams. If you really want to be technical, Yaakov had a dream. But Yaakov's dream was quasi-prophecy. The dream of Uferatzda was really a dream-like prophecy. But with Yosef, there's no indication of prophecy per se. It's a dream. And the dream is of Yosef, where the brothers are gathering the sheaves and everybody's bowing. And then afterwards, another dream where the heavens, there's the moon and the stars. What happens because of this dream? Yosef's brothers are extremely jealous of him. And eventually they make the fateful decision to get rid of him. Yosef goes down into Mitzrayim. And what happens then? He rises to great success in his new career of being a slave. And then Potiphar's wife tries to seduce him to do a terrible sin. Yosef refuses. And what does he get rewarded with? Jail time. How unfair. Except that after a little while in jail, suddenly he interprets dreams. And as a result of those dreams he interprets, he will later be released. Unfortunately, he relied too much on the favor of the Egyptian ministers, and that was not a good idea. He ends up staying in jail for an undue longer amount of time, and then the Pharaoh has a dream. Yosef begins with dreams. From Yosef's dreams, we go to the dreams of the butler and the baker, interpreted by Yosef, who ultimately interprets the dreams of the Pharaoh. Now, if you want to get very technical, the dream that really catalyzes everything is the dream of the butler and the baker. But that's directly linked. The dream of Yosef, the Torah tells us about, is part of the narrative, but there are other issues. The dream of the butler and the baker, that's exactly what happens. The Pharaoh has a dream. His dream needs to be interpreted. Oh, he says, I have a dream interpreter. Yosef is your man. Pull him out of the pit. They clean him up, and they present him to the Pharaoh. So think about this. This doesn't really say anywhere, but it's just, I find this very compelling. In the dream of the butler and the baker, one is reinstated, and one is sent off to the guillotines. Who is reinstated? The butler. Who gets sent away? The baker. On Pesach, we're not allowed to eat bread, and we must drink wine. The two icons of Pesach are matzah and yayin. The non-bread, right? We get rid of the bread, we get rid of the chametz. Pesach is the non-bread and the yayin, which we drink. It's just really interesting. Anyway, let's go share that. So we have these ingredients of golos, of wine and bread, or wine and no bread, which is how Pesach is characterized. And we're not talking about the bread today. That's another story. It's for different classes, the importance of eating the matzah and the terrible reality that bread represents, that chametz represents, why we have to be rid of it. But Rashi here says something stunning. I just showed you, in the Mishnah Rashi said, four cups. Where do four cups come from? Arba l'shoynis shel gevulah. Because we have four expressions of divine redemption. Now we're in the Gemara, we're analyzing this mitzvah of drinking wine. And the first thing we want to know is, who drinks wine? So the Bishua B'Levi comes along and he says, Noshim Chayavais. And Rashi says, oh yeah, Arba Kaisis. That's corresponding to the three times in the pasuk, the verse describes the dream of the Pharaoh raising his goblet. It says three times the word goblet. Hey Rashi, didn't you just say like a short 7.5 pages ago? Didn't you just tell us that the four cups of wine correspond to Arba Lashonot Shagula? This question, of course, is asked by everybody. And everybody gets, there are various answers that are given. The Or Chodosh answers in the following manner. He says, the truth is that both of these scriptural references and teachings are necessary and required. One is specific to the number four. On the Mishnah, when Rashi talks about four kosot, he's not talking about four kosot of what. It's not about four watts, it's about the number four. Where does the number four come from? Usually we, the Jewish people, don't emphasize the number four so much. The number three is, yes, true, Arba Imot, and we'll talk about that in a moment, but really Shlosha Avot. And the face of the merit of our ancestors is more often the Shalosh Avot, more so than the Arba Imot, to begin every Shemoneh Esrei by mentioning Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. There are three eras, not four generations. Three generations that represent the initial nascent development of the Jewish people, and that's the three generations of Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. The Shvatim is a different generation already. I mean, the idea of three is very prominent in Judaism. There's a reason that certain faith systems that come from Judaism took the number three and adopted it and twisted it into something unrecognizable. But Moshe Rabbeinu was the third son, or third child. He gives us the Torah, which is made of Torah, Nevi'im, and Ketuvim. Our nation is comprised of Kohanim, Levi'im, Yisraelim. The Torah is given in the third month. We left Mitzrayim in Nisan. We moved in the direction of Sinai and Iyar. We get the Torah in the third month. There's a whole bunch more. The Gemara has a whole series of threes.
And sevens
is something else. Well, now we're talking about threes. So why four cups? What's the what? It should be three cups. How many matzahs do we have, by the way?
Three.
How can we have three matzahs? How can we have three matzahs? We'll talk about that in a minute. So the question, though, first we have to understand what's up with the four. What does four have to do with Mitzrayim? I mean, why not seven? 90? I don't know. Three? 42? What did you get with a number like that? Four! Four, they won't be drunk. 10 cups of wine. Whoo, then we're going to be flying. You could have 4 cups of wine that'll send you flying, and 10 cups of wine that won't do anything. Where did the number 4 come from? So Rashi says, the number 4, it comes from the very beginning. When Hashem is talking about the redemption that will unfold, he uses 4 expressions. And as I mentioned earlier, our chachamim, our rabbis, our sages have explained to us how these 4 expressions represent 4 necessary levels in the development of the redemption and the removal of the Jewish people from Mitzrayim to come into their own as Hashem's special nation. So, therefore, says the Or Chodesh, the first business the order of business for Rashi is to explain how do we end up with number 4. 4, he says? 4? 4 is Vahotzesi, Vahotzalti, that's 4. Now, the Gemara is discussing the details. We have no problem with the number 4. But 4 what? 4 cups of 4 cups of wine? Really? That's a lot of cups of wine. Why are we drinking wine? What does wine have to do with anything? How do we end up with cups? And we'll soon see. Actually, the question is asked, why don't we take 4 breads? After all, min ha-Torah, the biblical obligation, is to eat bread, or not to eat bread, matzah. An obligation, biblically, to eat matzah. We don't have an obligation, biblically, to drink wine. It's only a rabbinic injunction. So why did the rabbis choose the number four? So our Chadash, as Rashi explains, he chose the number four because we have Otesi, Vitzalti, Vilakachti. Okay. You have those four expressions. But now the question then is, I understand why four cups, and why wine? So Rashi says, I'll tell you why. Because the entire story of the Exodus, the representation of Egypt, which is what causes Yosef to rise to greatness, which ultimately brings his father and his brothers and sets in motion the process of Galus Mitzrayim, which eventually yields to Geulas Yisrael. So he says, over there we have a business with the Pharaoh. And the Pharaoh's got cups. He's got goblets. But then you only have three goblets. Rashi says, yes, I know, it's true, we only have three goblets written about, but there is Birchat HaMazon, and Birchat HaMazon is always supposed to be over a glass of wine. So since Birchat HaMazon is naturally linked to a glass of wine, and since we have the Pharaoh speaking about three different cups to mention his goblet of wine three different times, that's the reason that the four cups actually mean, or the four languages, or the commemoration of that expression is played out with the cups of wine. That's the business of the four cups of wine. This is one way to understand what Rashi does here. Now, there are other interesting reasons or explanations to this. In the Sefer Lishmaya Belimudim, he says, the truth is that the women did not suffer as badly as the men in Mitzrayim. So therefore, we have these four Lashonis of Geula. Say, okay, what were the four Lashonis of Geula? We have a lashon veitzesi eschem. What veitzesi eschem? I'll take you out of where it says mitachas sivleis Mitzrayim, from under the burden of Egypt. But the primary backbreaking labor was borne by the male population, not by the female population. And it says veitzaltim eschem avedosam. It was the men who were tormented and beaten. Was not the woman. So therefore, the Jewish women were not technically enslaved in the way the Jewish men were. The women didn't work in those days. So the Jewish women were left alone. The Pharaoh had plans for them. He wanted to assimilate the Jewish women. He wanted to destroy the Jewish nation. He had a final solution in mind. But to say that they were saved from slavery per se, that doesn't come naturally. So therefore, since Rabbi Shul Malevi here is talking about Noshim Chayavis, the obligation of women, when he talked about earlier, was the obligation, he said four cups was redemption. The redemption talks about being saved from the burden, the pain, the suffering, the anguish of bondage and hard backbreaking labor. But now we're talking about Noshim Chayaves, so therefore we have to reference this idea of a goblet, a cup, which is not necessarily connected only to those four languages. And here is an interesting question. Here is an interesting question, which is raised by Tosfos, and by the Meiri, another Rishonim. And that the question is, one second, when it comes to women, we know that when it's mitzvah saseh, shazman grama, when it's a positive deed, the Torah is telling you to do something, but that action that must be taken is time-bound, so the halacha is for men only. Women are exempt. Comes the question, why are women obligated to drink four cups of wine?
It's time.
Of course it's time. It has to be done at night. It has to be done the evening of Pesach.
However,
same time as the matzah. This is business. It doesn't say the mitzvah says zman grama is when there are babies. A woman who never has babies or never gets married is also not obligated. All of these explanations do not really form the basis of that principle. They could be explanations of what some of the reasons why that principle is in place. But the principle is a principle. And the principle is that a requirement of going ahead and acting when it's time-bound is not generally applicable upon women. So why would it be obligatory over here? And the Gemara answers that. Why are Noshim Chayavis Barba Kais Halalu? I'll tell you why. Sha'af Hein Hoyu Ba'isa HaNes. Because they too are part of that miracle. And because they too are part of that miracle, that's why they're also obligated in this time-bound mitzvah. Now, by the way, this is not the only thing like this. We actually have a number of different things that are like this. As we're going to soon see in Rashi, the concept of the Mikra Megillah, the Purim, Festival of Purim, is very much linked to women. And the story of Hanukkah is also linked to women. So we say, Af heino yubayisay next. But the Tosfos and the media ask, one second. This is not a mitzvah asay. It's not a biblical mitzvah. Nowhere in the Torah does it say drink four cups of wine the night of Pesach. This is a rabbinic injunction. And because it's a rabbinic injunction, we shouldn't even need this answer. I'm sure Balevi is coming to answer the unspoken question. Why a woman going to be obligated at a time-bound observance? After all, it's a mitzvah taseh, shazman grama. It's a positive mitzvah that is time-bound. The Tosfos says, what do you mean? It's not a mitzvah. It's not obligatory. So the answer that's given, very simply, is that afagaf the arba kaisis that abundance says Tosfos, even though the four kaisis are rabbinic origin, ke'ein the oiraisa tikkun. Whenever the rabbis set up a mitzvah institution, they follow the pattern of the Torah's injunction. So if the Torah gave us mitzvahs to do, positive mitzvahs, and the Torah spoke to us in a specific tongue, in a specific context, and said to us that women are not obligated when it comes to a time-bound positive, something we should do, so then that's the case. If it would be a rabbinic mitzvah, the same notion would be in place as well. Why? Because ke'ein d'oraisa. When the rabbis did something, they did it along the lines of the biblical mitzvah. I will... On the contrary, that's what Bishul Belevi is coming to explain. So why did the woman have to drink the four cups? He says, the answer is, I'll give you an example that I think is very easy to understand, where you see it almost works against itself, but nonetheless, if the Chachamim did something that was in the image of a biblical mitzvah, they did it ke'in d'oraisa. So we have a mitzvah in the Torah that says we're not allowed to drink wine that comes from people who are not Jewish and involved in idolatry. No, they'll drink wine. Why? Because wine is a sacrament. And by the way, it has always been a sacrament. From the very beginning of time, wine was a sacrament. And even in today's day and age, religions obsess over wine. Some faith systems don't drink wine. Some faith systems drink too much wine. Some faith systems don't drink wine, but they use the wine as a sacrament. This has always been, faith systems always use wine. And Das HaEmes, the faith of Emes of Torah, also is a business of wine. Pour wine libation, wine is poured in them as bad. So the halacha is that when we're talking about that which is used for idolatrous purposes, it's only wine which is in its natural and normative state. But if it's wine that's boiled, it's called mevushal, then it's no longer fit for use on the mizbeach, and as such, it shouldn't be used as a sacrament. That was one of our laws, our principles, and it was also in the pagan world. They had the same principles. Whether they took it from us or not is not relevant. They have the same principle. If it's cooked, there's no issue. Now, what about drinking the wine of a Gentile who's not an idolater? Maybe a Gentile who believes in God. Maybe a Gentile who respects the Jewish faith very much. There's an issue? So biblically, there's no issue. Why is there a rabbinic issue? Because wine... is not only a sacramental drink, it's also a romantic drink. Drinking wine is something that nurtures an intimate form of relationship, a closeness. It could be a closeness that's actually romantic, where a couple sits down and drinks some wine together, or could just be good friends. But wine is a glue, a substance that's used to nurture and develop friendships. You could have a cup of coffee with anybody. But you don't just sit and drink a bottle of wine with somebody. You say, have a coffee? I'll have a cup of coffee. Let's sit and drink wine. I don't even know who you are. I'll drink wine with you. That's the nature of wine. And the Chachamim wanted to help us keep the Torah. And one of the greatest dangers, always has been, and is in today's day and age, perhaps more so than in the last few centuries, one of the great dangers of Judaism is intermarriage. If we turn our back on Hashem, by embracing and marrying outside of a faith, very bad. Very bad. That's, first of all, it's the end of our Jewish generation, so we won't exist anymore. But besides that, the Torah actually likens intermarriage to idolatry. So because of this, our sages said you can't drink wine. Can't drink wine with non-Jews. Why? We don't want to nurture that close, friendly. We maintain a respectful distance. We respect our neighbors. We're nice to our neighbors. We're polite. That's not our intimate friends. Our intimate friendships should be with fellow Yidden. And that's where our true friendships are. That's who we want to build our families with our fellow Yidden. So the halacha is that if the wine is mevushal, you can drink it with somebody who's not Jewish. In fact, even if he's an idolater. If it's mevushal, it's not an issue. which seems to make no sense whatsoever. What do you think? The truth is that non-kosher wines all are not mevushal. That's the truth. But the kosher wines, you go to an event, a simcha, and you have a non-kosher waiter or waiter or waitress pouring wine to you. How do you do that? The answer is, it's mevushal. Yeah, but mevushal wine could be just as intoxicating. It's true, the finer kosher wines are not mevushal. That's true. But most kosher wines today, or a very, very large majority, are mevushal. And that could bring to all kinds of things. True. But since the Torah has spoken of wine, and since now the sages are speaking of wine, the sages did not feel they had license to create a reality that's outside of the Torah's structure. The Torah structure is such, we expanded the Torah structure, but we followed the principles and the structure of the biblical concept. Okay, so it's just giving you an example. So the same thing, because the mitzvah seisha as man grama, if it's going to be a positive mitzvah which is time-bound, initially, our approach would be women are not exempt. Women are not obligated. Women are exempt. So if we find the fact that they are obligated, the obvious question comes, why? It's a mitzvah seisha as man grama. Even if it's from the chachamim, still, it's time-bound. Women should not be responsible. The answer is, but in this case, it's different. Why? Sha'af hein hoyo ba'isyanes. Because they, too, were in this miracle. Now, before we go into this business of af hein hoyo ba'isyanes, I just want to point out to you that this question of having four matzahs, it's not an original question. It's not my question. There was a great Rishon. His name was the Mordechai. And the Mordechai asked this question. He says, Liboy, Arba Lechomim. Okay, that's nice. You had four languages of redemption, and you have to eat matzah tonight. Perfect. Four matzahs on the table. It's the most natural thing. Torah uses expressions. We eat the matzah to fulfill a mitzvah. Four helpings of murah, nobody would be happy with. But four matzahs, what's the problem? What's the issue? So the Mordechai suggests that the four, this is also connected to four cups of, it says, Kos Yeshuos Esa. I raise up a glass of salvation. We speak about, elsewhere it's spoken of Hashem's wrath that we poured upon our enemies, or a cup of salvation. And this is like the path that the Mordechai follows in trying to explain why the idea of the four applies to cups of wine, to a beverage, but not to the bread of Pesach, to the bread of affliction, to the matzah. There's a very beautiful sikh from the Rebbe, where the Rebbe goes into all the nuances. That would be, if I would tell you what says in that sikh, that's the rest of the class. But this edited talk of the Rebbe goes through the whole business of three and four and matzah and wine. And the Rebbe explains how the concept of wine, which represents taste and rhyme and reason, and our participation, this is the idea of four. But the idea of three represents Hashem reaching out to us, and Hashem reaching out to us whether we're ready or not, here he comes. That's the concept of matzah, which is tasteless, and represents subservience and self-abnegation. And the Rebbe says, Lechem Oini, he talks about those four languages, and he says the fourth of them, the first three is all God. Veitzesi, Veitzalti, that's all God. But Vilakachti, when he's taking us to him, that's referring to Matan Torah. And when he took us to him, what first had to happen?
We had to agree.
We had to agree. And actually, we got a little cold feet right before. We said Ma'asav Nishma, but then we weren't so sure. And the story goes, Kofaleim Harkigigas, God held the mountain over them, so to speak. It's a euphemism, but he didn't give us an option at the end. And that's why Purim is a very special time, because then we chose to be Jewish. That we weren't overwhelmed. We weren't wowed. But the point is that the idea of Ulakachti, we have to be ready to be taken. But being saved from our enemies, having our enemies destroyed, being scooped up and sheltered and protected, that's something that was in Hashem's hands. So the matzah represents our subservience. The wine, conversely, represents our rhyme and reason. And interestingly, the matzah is a biblical mitzvah that Hashem gives us. The wine, it's a rabbinic mitzvah, which Am Yisrael, the sages of Israel, our nation, our people, understanding what Hashem would want from us, created this mitzvah of drinking the four cups of wine. Anyway, but that's a very long, nuanced, and beautiful idea. So let's move ahead now onto Amud Beis. So, Af Hein Hoyu Ba'isei Nes. They too were a part of this miracle. Says Rashi, Kidam Rinan, like we say, and this is found in Mesechet Sota, on page 11, and it says, this is a quote. It's a quote. Bizchar nashim tzidkaniot, in the merit of righteous women, sheba'ota ador of that generation, nigalu. That's why we were redeemed. Now Rashi adds, by the way, this is not unique only to Purim, to Pesach, pardon me, it's by Purim also. V'chein gabi mikra megillah nami. When it comes to mikra megillah, we also say the same thing. Why? We say, mishum dahi de Esther nigalu. Where do we find a role, an oversized role that the women played? The answer is, the women, plural, we didn't. But Esther played the oversized role. It's called Megillas Esther. So they were right there. V'chein gabi ner Chanukah. Women did play an oversized role. Some of the stories are well known, some are not known at all. But the women were the real backbone of the Maccabee revolt. And it was the women's goading and encouraging and challenging to the men that made them actually rise up against their enemies. And had not been for the Jewish woman, there would not have been a story of Chanukah. Both in the beginning, she launches, the daughter of the Kohen Gadol launches the entire story, the daughter of Hashmonai, as it says. And then at the end, was Yehudas who beheads Eliphorni, and that is when the Greek soldiers abandoned Yerushalayim, and our men came to retake the Temple Mount and our holy city. So we see this business of the women playing a very, very prominent, oversized, and even leading role. Which leads us to the question. When you say in Hebrew, af, what does it mean, af hein? You ever not translate it in English? Af hein? They too means playing a leading role, or they too means playing a secondary role. Secondary. They too. A you too. Nobody likes to be a you too. I mean, me too. Me too means like I'm secondary. I wasn't the first blush here. So comes the question. He telling me a story. Rashi himself just said it. He's quoting the Gemara in Saita. The Gemara in Saita says that Kedam Rinon bischar noshim, not gam bischar noshim. Bischar noshim. We know this on a very literal level because when the women brought their mirrors, their copper mirrors, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want them. And Hashem says, take them. Chaviv and alai. Those are the most precious possessions to me. Why? Shal yedeim hem midu deiris. It was through those mirrors that the women beautified themselves and they got their husbands to be with them, and that's how generations were created. In other words, if not for the women, there wouldn't have been a Jewish tomorrow. And let's not forget precocious little Miriam, who said to her parents, you are worse than the Pharaoh. They said, what? She said, you know what I said? The Pharaoh made a decree against Jewish men. He said, no baby boys. You say no babies. Yocheved says she has a point. Amram says, yeah, you're right. They get married again, remarried. And who's born from that union? Moshe Rabbeinu. And the entire story, the beginning of the Golus Mitzrayim, when around the last 80 years of hell, which was when it really got really bad, who was there and the vanguard? Miriam and Yocheved. Who saves Moshe? Miriam. The women played a leading role, not a secondary role. So what is the business of af? Af means they too. They're not primary. So how do we understand this? So there's a sefer called Kapish Tmarim, and he says like this. He says the truth is, there's no question about it, that le'nigalu rak b'schus nashim tzkanias. Only it was entirely the women that were able to bring us the concept of redemption. But he says, it's not really only the women. So who was it? The men? No. When you say vis-a-vis the men, it was not the men, it was the women. Population, from a population perspective, it was the women, not the men. It was the female gender, not the male gender. But, says the Kapas Tamarim, there's another medrash that says, Shebizchus ha'avos nigalu aviseinu, that our ancestors were redeemed in the merit of the forefathers. It says specifically the forefathers. And we hear in the Haggadah, we say the story, Vanitzak al Hashem, we cry out to Hashem, and it says God remembers the promise that He made to the Avos, to the forefathers. So He has an emphasis here on forefathers. There's another medrash that says that Bizuchut Moshe v'Aharon, the merit of Moshe v'Aharon was enough to carry their entire generation. So when we say Af Hein Hoyu Ba'isei Nes, the misreading is the men did it. The women also played a role. That's obviously wrong. That's not the pshat. Afen hoya baisenes means it was not just Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. It was not just Moshe v'Aaron. It was the women of their generation as well. So yes, there's a few outstanding men, patriarchs. There was two people alive, Moshe v'Aaron. But as far as the masses were concerned, it was the masses also. Not the male masses, the female masses. And therefore, that's the idea of af. So it's not, it doesn't detract from the woman's prominence vis-a-vis their male counterparts, but it does explain to you that that wasn't the only force in play that catalyzed the notion of Gulum Mitzrayim, of redemption. And the truth is that the women merited to bring about the redemption, but they were not under the same threat. They were not under the same threat. They were not under the same danger. So the Gemara says, no, they were also under danger. Don't think the Jewish woman had an easy life in Mitzrayim. Af hein hoyu ba'isei nes doesn't mean hein hoyu, that they were also responsible for redemption. No, they were responsible for redemption. But as far as the exodus, the redemption from the terrible circumstances, one might the men had bore the primary responsibility. We actually talked about that before. We said in the languages of Geula, it would only be emphasis on the men. That's one of the answers in the difference between Rashi. So he says, no, afein al yabaisenesh, they were also part of the miracle. They also suffered terribly. They were also in danger, and therefore they should be drinking wine as well. All right. Says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, Abba, Kaisis Halalu, these four cups, Tzarech Shiehe Behen, Kedei Mezigeis Kais Yofa. There has to be enough wine in each one of them to fill a nice cup. What's a nice cup? A nice cup. So Rashi says a nice cup of wine is shiurei roiva revius. It means one-fourth of a revius. A revius is a halachic modicum amount. That's the minimum amount of what's called having a drink. Otherwise, it's a sip. But the drink, a revius is 2.9 fluid ounces. But in those days, they used to use a very thick paste, like a syrup. It wasn't potable, it wasn't drinkable. It's like when you go to the soda machines today and they hook it up to this machine that pours water in and gives you fizz, and then you have your really nice Coca-Cola, and some people like that more than buying things that's in a glass or a bottle. But the wine then was also like a syrup. It wasn't meant to drink. It was meant to be used as a concentrate. It's meant to be mixed as a drink, and that's actually where the notion of mixing drinks comes from. The original, in the ancient world, people didn't have drinks that were actually potable, like the some of the vodka in Russia. It's not for humans. Like they call it zini, and Yiddish is called zechsen neinziger, 96%. You know, 80% means 40% alcohol. Can you imagine 96? It's not human. It's not a normal person can't drink that. Russians have a special constitution. They can handle the stuff. Like it's terrible stuff. Horrible. I forgot what it's called in English. The company in New York, in America, called Graves, that makes it. A beautiful name. Like a grave. It's like crazy stuff. Right? No, this is much worse than Munchen. I mean, why did they make that alcohol? Who did they make it for? Who in heaven drinks it? The answer is, it's not made to drink plain. It's made to be mixed. It's a very, very powerful vodka. It's basically pure alcohol. And you mix the alcohol, and then you get something which is drinkable. It's drinkable. So that's how the wine used to be once upon a time. The bartender knew how to mix the drinks. You know how to mix the wines. That was a Jewish thing. So people just drink wine. So a revius, which is 2.9 ounces, was one-fourth actual concentrate of this very heavy, thick syrup. And then it was mixed. It was you mixed water in, and you mixed it together, and it became a fine wine. So this is what Rashi says, the chamra, delay, dori, al-chad, tlas, maya, lav chamrahu. A wine this kind of wine that didn't have two-thirds water and three-fourths water or one-fourth would be of that wine, it's not wine. It's not drinkable. It doesn't taste good. So therefore, the assumption now at this point in the Gemara is that we need to have amongst all four cups of wine, there has to actually be a revius of wine, which makes sense. It actually makes sense. Because the revius is one-fourth, and if all four cups have to be revius, then altogether, how much of this intense stuff would you need? 2.9 ounces. That actually makes sense. All right, so now we understand that it has to be a kais yofa. Why is it called a kais yofa? So when it comes to Berchat HaMazon, we have a Gemara in Brachas, and the Gemara in Brachas tells us that there are 10 things, asar advarim nemru bekais shel bracha. There are 10 things. You have to clean the cup, and you have to rinse it, and you have to prepare it. A whole bunch of things. It's supposed to be a nice cup. Even physically, materially, the glass is supposed to be clean and rinsed and appropriate. A whole bunch of things that are about. So they have this idea of people say, have a nice glass of wine, or have a glass of nice wine. It's an expression. So it has to be a kais yofa, and a kais yofa is telling us basically the way we're going to drink this wine, the amount of wine that's going to be drunk, and so on and so forth. So the Gemara says, what happens? Shesa on chai. What if you drink this raw? Raw means you drink the paste. What happens then? So the Gemara says something very interesting. Shason chai, yatsa. You fulfill the mitzvah.
From one cup of the concentrate.
Doesn't say from one cup. We'll see in a minute. So far it says, you drank them, concentrate. The Gemara comes along and says, Shason bevasachas. You drank it at once. Yatsa. Hishke mehem lebanavul of nevesa. You gave it to everybody else to drink. Yatsa. You fulfilled the mitzvah. Wow, that's like a really heavy-duty statement. Rabbi Yehuda said in Shmuel's name three shocking things. Why? Because one, he says, you drink wine, which is not even drinkable, you still fulfill it. You drink four cups of wine in one cup, you still fulfill it. It's not four cups of wine. And you gave it out to everybody else to drink. So how did you fulfill it? So none of these three halachas actually is intuitive. Everything here seems like, what? Like, where is he coming from? So the Gemara now is going to actually analyze all of these three halachas, all these three din. So the Gemara comes back. Okay, let's take a look at this. Really? Shason chai? Shason chai yotza. Shason chai, you drank it raw, you fulfilled the mitzvah. The Gemara says, okay, explain that to me. What does it mean? Omar Rava. Rava says, when it says shason chai, do you know what it means? That you yotza? I know what it means, shason chai, drink it raw. What does it mean, yotza? He says, I'll tell you what it means. It means yedei yayin yotza. You fulfilled the obligation of yayin. Yidei cheirus, the obligation of freedom, lo yotza. You did not fulfill. So what does this mean? Rashi says, shesa'on chai means shaloi mozgi b'mayim. It was not mixed with water. It's raw. And Rashi then tells us, what is the meaning of yotza? Says Rashi, Yedei yayin yotza, sheshasa, dalid, kaisos. You drank four cups. However, yedei cheres le yotza, you did not fulfill the obligation of freedom. Kiloimari says, ein zoi mitzvah shleima. It's an incomplete mitzvah. It's a part of a mitzvah. But the mitzvah was not fulfilled in its entirety. Excellent question. What is going on? How could you say a mitzvah is not fulfilled in its entirety? It's like being a little bit pregnant. No such thing. Either you did the mitzvah, or you didn't do the mitzvah. Imagine somebody puts on tefillin with only two of the parshiot. Or he has half a mezuzah. It's not a mitzvah. What is this talking about over here? So the truth is that there are many, many beautiful explanations. But I want to share with you a contemporary explanation, which was developed, a theory that was developed by the Brisker of Sun, also known as Velvel Brisker, the Griz. And he, in his commentary, has some of his lectures that he gave in the Rambam, he explains a very interesting thing. He suggests that the institution that the Chachamim put into motion of drinking four cups of wine on the night of Pesach actually serves two distinctly different purposes. Number one is that we know that there is an obligation on Pesach to express ourselves not only verbally, but also in body language, in a manner that bespeaks freedom, liberty, luxuriating. You're acting in a way in which everything about you says, I'm free, and I'm grateful for it, and I'm relaxing, and I'm delighted, and I'm happy and satisfied. And we talked about this in our previous class in great detail. That's what the posture is all about. That's what we're even supposed to lean in a certain way. And the leaning in that particular way has an influence on the people on the table and us. As we talked about the idea of body language. So he says, if you're going to drink wine, what does wine say? You don't just drink wine just like that. If you walked into your office one day and saw people drinking wine, you go, what's up with the wine? You see them drinking Coca-Cola, you wouldn't ask any questions. You see them drinking water, you don't ask questions. You see them drinking coffee or tea, you don't ask questions. Wine? Why do we break open a bottle of wine? What's going on here? So wine has a certain message. Wine brings with it this idea of freedom, of luxury. You need time to open a bottle of wine. You drink a can of Coke on the fly. Nobody drinks have a glass of wine. Yeah, sure, I'm running out the door, put it in a paper cup, run out the door. That's not it. You don't drink wine like that. For wine, nobody has Coke glasses or water glasses. People have wine glasses. So the idea of wine, it expresses a certain kind of feeling which is endemic to the night of Pesach. Then the Gris says, there's another notion. There is this notion of drinking actually four cups. And that we connect, like Rashi said, four cups, the pharaoh. It's four cups. It's a concept of drinking four cups. So he says, if you drank wine, and it was four cups, and you couldn't stand the wine, you still fulfilled the mitzvah drinking four cups of wine. It's still four cups of wine. You can't get away from that. Four cups of wine or four cups of wine. Well, I don't like wine. You still drank wine? What if it's not good wine? You still drank wine? And that's the meaning then, when Rashi says it's not a mitzvah shlema. This mitzvah, this rabbinic mitzvah, has two distinctly different elements that are mutually complementary. Number one, there's this idea of drinking four cups of wine, and that it embodies and represents something very important, something key to the night of Pesach and the concept of redemption, both in the number four as well as the other goblet. Whether you follow the reasoning of the Mordechai because it's Kais Yeshua's, or the reasoning of Rashi as is explained by the Mefarshim, that it's connected to the concept of the Kos Faro. And of course, these are all truisms. They're all true. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chaim. They're all words of the living God. They're all parts. They all form the corpus and the background of why we do what we do. So that you'll fulfill. But there's another element here. And there's an element here that the night of Pesach is the night and one is supposed to be free. Cheirus. And the drink of freedom is wine. That's the most special drink. It always has been and it always will be. There's something unique about wine, especially wine that comes from grapes, and especially red wine. We're going to see later. Neither is a mitzvah unto itself. And they're certainly not mutually exclusive of each other. So to fulfill the mitzvah fully, the four cups of wine are supposed to accomplish two things. Number one, they're supposed to demonstrate our sense of freedom. Number one, they're supposed to demonstrate or represent, they're emblematic of these four different ideas. So that's the meaning of Yotzah. Yotzah means you fulfill something, not you fulfill your full obligation. There is an element that was fulfilled. So that's what Rava says. Yidei Yayin, the idea of Yayin, the idea of drinking four cups of wine, and everything that represents Yotzah. But Yidei Cheirus la Yotzah. And then the Gemara says the same thing is about the next. Shosom b'vasachas. I drank four cups at once. I drank four cups at once. What kind of four cups are there? The four cups is not four cups. Yeah, I took four cups, put them into one. So it's one cup. It's a tumbler. It's not four cups of wine. So what does the Gemara say? So the Gemara now says, let's look at the next halacha. Shosom b'vasachas. He drank them at once. He drank them at once. It's not four anymore. What if you put 20 cups, 20 little thimbles? It becomes 20 cups. It's one cup. So Rav Omar Rav says, Yidei Yayin Yotzah. You fulfill the mitzvah of Yayin. Why the mitzvah of Yayin? Because Yayin represents freedom. And I had a very large glass of wine. And according to Halacha, the minimum amount of wine is a revius. I had four revius. I had not 2.9 ounces. I had just under 5.8 ounces. Not only I had 5.8 ounces, I had almost 12 ounces of wine. 11 and a half ounces. Oh, 11 and a half ounces. That's a serious cup of wine. You're really enjoying it, having a good time tonight. He says, yeah, it's Pesach. I have a good time on Pesach. I have friends of mine who were in Russia once for a Seder. They come to the Seder. Nebuch, these Jews, says, no background. They came with a bottle of vodka to the Seder. So my friends were like, it's Pesach. What are you doing? Vodka's like chametz. The guy says to me Yiddish. He says, Rebbe, a Seder on l'chaim? You're going to have a Seder? You're not going to drink? I mean, Bechalal, generally Jews always say l'chaim, especially like Russian Jews. Of course, forget the whole Russia says l'chaim. How are you going to have a Jewish event with no l'chaim? So, well, actually, yes l'chaim, but like, you know, they got it right in France, they're drinking wine. So in Russia, they couldn't afford the wine, so they ended up drinking lots of wheat, so they made vodka instead. The point is, their feeling and their sentiment was correct. There needs to be l'chaim. Only not that l'chaim. It has to be kosher l'pesach. It has to be wine. Because really, wine is really that drink of luxury. So, guy went ahead and drank a lot of wine. He sat down and polished off a bottle of wine. He said, how do you feel? He says, free, great. Of course, he drank a bottle of wine. He feels free. So he fulfilled. That element was fulfilled. This is a silly joke. It has nothing to do with anything. But some guy was watching on the television, this guy, Dr. Phil, he said, if you're not happy, you should go finish all the things you started. So he thought, that's pretty good advice. He went home, he finished a bottle of vodka, he finished a bottle of wine, he finished a box of chocolates, and he finished the rest of his Prozac, and he was very happy.
A revius. So you're saying is that equivalent to a quarter of a cup of wine? Is that what you're saying?
No. No. What I'm saying is that the halachic amount, by the way, there are other opinions. It goes as much as 3.5. But that's like a standard that we follow is 2.9 ounces. The point is that you have to have a serving of wine. A glass of wine, less than the revius, is not called a glass of wine. It's a little l'chaim cup. It's not a glass of wine. So a glass of wine is going to have usually a little more than 3 ounces. So this person drank a tumbler of wine. A lot of wine. So the Gemara says, yes, you drank a lot of wine. Yidei cheiros. Yotza, what does it mean, yotza? What does it mean, yidei yayin yotza, he says. He fulfills wine, as the Gemara explained. He fulfilled the element of wine. It's very nice. But yidei harba kesis liyotza. He didn't fulfill the 4 cups. The whole idea is, it shouldn't just be a lot of wine. It should be in the multiple of 4. With intervals. That you didn't fulfill. And the Gemara continues now and says, and the same thing is also, Hishkemehen, Lebanav Levnesa, Lebanav Levnevesa, he gave it out to everybody. Yotze he fulfilled. Omer Rav Nachman by Yitzchak, Rachman says, V'hu, the Ishtiru b'dekasa. When can you fulfill? By sharing your cup. You first have to drink most of the cup. So if you have a large goblet that has 6 or 7 ounces of wine, and you drink 3 ounces of wine, okay. So then at least you fulfilled the bir modicum. You drank at least the 3 ounces, you left over 2. So now you drank 4, 5 ounces, and you left over 2 ounces, at least then you fulfilled the mitzvah. Then you can distribute the wine amongst everybody else. But if you didn't do it, that would be another story. Yeah.
You're saying that, I mean, is it possible also to mix any two? Grape juice with the wine?
Okay, it's a really good question. So let me, before I respond to your question about grape juice, I'm going to ask you a better question. So we just read in the Gemara here that you have to mix wine and water. Can you do that? So Rashbam says, he says, you should understand, Hani Mili, says Rashbam, all of this discussion in the Gemara is b'yeinos shelohen. That's in their wines. That's in the wines of those of that era. He says, in the wines of once upon a time, you had to mix. It was alchad plus for one amount, one dollop. You had 3 amounts of wine. He says, avol yeinos shelonu. Rashbam is living already almost 700 years ago. He says, our wine, he says, lei bayi meziga. Our wine does not require any kind of mixing. The wine that we have is perfectly drinkable. And, I don't know, but I'm told that the wine we drink has already so much water in it that if you add any water, you can't even make a bayi pragofen anymore. Right? So first of all, the question is, could you add water into our wine? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean, there are some nicer wines today. But it's not like these like kiddish wines. It's full of water. Now, your question, what about grape juice? So the answer would be, grape juice is boir pri hagafen. But at the same time, grape juice is not wine. So if somebody is a problem, he's in Alcoholics Anonymous, that's another story. It's not funny. That's a serious thing. If somebody has an issue drinking wine, then grape juice may be the answer. And there may even be other answers. But if a person is in a normal, healthy state, yes, he should be drinking 4 cups of wine. The question is, does the entire cup have to be of wine? So the answer would be that as long as it's mostly wine, even 51%, and somebody augments the wine. If you have, let's say, a cup of 4 ounces, or 5 ounces, and you put close to 3 arvias of actual wine, and then you topped it off with grape juice, that's something else. That's a lot of people, becomes they get to the last 2 cups, they're really nervous. You know, they're not going to make it to the Seder, and it's already 2 o'clock in the morning. So then you can add a little bit of grape juice. But the primary amount, very few people, by the way, have 2.9 ounce cups. I never saw such a cup. Most glasses are a little larger. The primary amount should be wine. You could add a little grape juice. That doesn't take away from making the bracha of boir pri hagafen. So now we have a good understanding, A, of who has to drink the wine, and B, how much wine has to be drunk, and C, in what intervals, in what way the wine has to be drunk, who, everybody, men and women alike, when, we didn't talk about, what, 4 cups, of what? Of wine that's well mixed. And we have an understanding of what the 4 cups represent. With Hashem's help, the next time we revisit this Gemara, we're going to analyze Yemei Tzah Hashem. Further, we'll talk about the 4 cups. We'll talk about the difference. We'll talk about the difference between grape juice or aged wine. We'll talk about what color the wine is supposed to be. We'll talk about children. Are children supposed to drink 4 cups of wine? And why even are children even discussed over here? So this Yemei Tzah Hashem will be part 2 of our class on the wine. And with this, we'll say, L'chaim.